Your Excellencies, Prince Abdullah, President and members of the Legion, my host, our guests, ladies and gentlemen, from the bottom of my heart, I thank and bless with all the love and affection after 60 years of intimate, perhaps more than a family affection and relation. I thank and bless my spiritual children for this magnificent celebration in Africa. I will just say a short sentence. Paternal blessings, love, affection always. On behalf of the Ismaili community of Africa and for myself, I wholeheartedly thank His Excellency the Governor of Tanganyika and his government, the governors of Kenya and Uganda and their governments, the Governor General and government of Madagascar, the government of Portuguese Africa and the Belgian Congo, and last but certainly not least, the government of the Union of South Africa and Field Marshal Smuts for all the help, assistance, encouragement and facilities they have given to the Ismaili community so that they might celebrate this diamond jubilee. I need not say that without the cordial and helpful goodwill of the authorities of Tanganyika, Kenya, Uganda and Zanzibar and of the East African Governors Conference, we could never have succeeded in making this celebration a possibility. I also sincerely thank His Majesty's Secretary of State for the colonies and then the Secretary of State who has honored us all by gracing this occasion with his presence, for all the help and assistance they've given, and especially for having made it possible for us to get the diamonds for this ceremony. We are most grateful also to the various diamond syndicates who have done all they could in a particularly difficult enterprise. The railway authorities, the British India Steam Navigation Company and Mrs. Smith Mackenzie, the British Overseas Airways Corporation and the East African Airways Corporation have all been more than kind to us, and I'm sure we are grateful to them. We have found goodwill everywhere, and the milk of human brotherhood and understanding has flowed freely. I must thank Barclays Bank and their managers for they've been most helpful, and without their help and assistance, we could have never had these diamonds. And on behalf of Ismailis and myself, I'm most grateful to the Standard Bank of South Africa and their management for the help they gave in forming the investment trust by their good advice and assistance. The railway authorities of Tanganyika and the Kenyan Uganda Railways and harbors have all gone out of their way to help us, and by hard work have organized these difficult journeys for my people. Here in Dar es Salaam, the police have been ever helpful in every way, and on behalf of the Ismailis, I thank the Commissioner of Police, Mr. Bitri, his senior officers, and all the askari, all of whom have carried us with obvious good humor so many extra difficult duties and hours of labor. The good health in the camps, the excellent sanitary arrangements, foreseen and ordered with almost incredible precision and exactitude, has been the work of the Medical Officer of Health in Dar es Salaam, Dr. Aitken. To whom I say, on behalf of all the Ismailis who have come here into the camps, thank you, Doctor. Mr. President of the Legion and Ismailis, these celebrations, if looked upon as mere glorification or even as only thanksgiving for my 60 years of imamate, would not be worth the enormous discomfort, expense, and sacrifices they have incurred on some 40,000 people. No, but it has given us the opportunity for which I have been waiting for many years to carry out a fundamental change in the economic sphere of the lives of my spiritual children. For the last 10 or 15 years, I've realized that the good old ways of life in all its material forms, if persisted in, would lead to an inevitable downward trend for all Ismailis. What was the good old life of the past for the majority of them? And what is it still? Individual effort, what I may almost call isolation of man from man and of each from society. Shopkeeping, agencies, trading were all right in the past, but must, if slavishly followed in the future, lead to impoverishment, over-competition, and the absence through want of capital and knowledge of what I may call legitimate speculation. The future looked black. The health and the education of the people also needed and need planning and foresight. Under such circumstances, the Diamond Jubilee came as a unique opportunity for bringing about some radical changes, not only materially, but of the general outlook amongst my people. The extreme individualistic capitalism of the individual Indian trader of the past 100 years has reached its death agony. There is neither the direction nor that concentration of capital which during the last 100 years, through limited liability societies, has gone to make the prosperity of Britain. Vast limited liability societies were out of the question. Something entirely new, but suited and indeed naturally grown out of the past, the present and future outlook of the Ismailis, it was needed. I cannot do better than describe it as a combination of the extreme individualistic Indian trader of the 19th century with some form of nascent socialism. At the present stage, this was our only hope to carry us through to the next generation. For this, while still during the war, in Switzerland and without any kind of possibility of communications with my followers except by cable. There are no letters in those days possible. In those terrible days, one had no possibility of hearing anything except by the shortest cables. Well, during that period, I suggested to them over and over the establishment of big building companies or a bank or some such attempt to break away from the past. Various committees throughout Africa worked out my ideas. When at last I could come to this part of the world, I called an economic conference of such men of light and leading as the community possessed to bring about the necessary change of outlook and effort. This economic conference met at Nairobi, and after many a sitting passed resolutions, which with small variations we have carried through, and mean to take forward as another big step from this afternoon onwards. With the help of the government of Tanganyika, the Diamond Jubilee Investment Trust, with a capital of £1 million, which was rapidly subscribed, was formed at Dar es Salaam. The fact of a capital must be used for investment in the ordinary sense of the term, a greater part goes to the building up of a totally new financial outlook amongst the Ismailis. Cooperative society, cooperation, and I hope and believe very soon building societies will draw from the investment trust some equal to their capital, but at the level rate of 3%, and they are not allowed to charge more than 6% under any condition from their borrowers. These corporations and cooperatives and building societies will in future be the centers from which side by side with individual efforts, organized advance will be made. As everyone is well aware, the value of these bonds has been unconditionally presented to me on this occasion. I do not wish to take this amount for myself, but to use it for any object that I think is best for my spiritual children. After long reflection, and I assure you, it has meant many a sleepless hour at night, I've come to the conclusion that the very best use in the long run that I can make of it is that after the expenses of these celebrations, in the wider sense of the word, have been paid for, then the whole of the residue must be given as an absolute gift to the Diamond Jubilee Investment Trust. Thousands and thousands of Ismaili families have shares in this trust. No doubt there are many others who subscribe and who are not shareholders. But the whole object of the scheme is that such individuals should now form themselves into cooperative lending associations or trading corporations or building societies, and by borrowing from the investment trust at 2%, become indirectly beneficiaries and very substantial beneficiaries of the whole capital of the investment trust and the immense gift it receives today. Let there be no misunderstanding. Very few of the directors, and in fact hardly any one of the ordinary shareholders, have large blocks of shares held by rich men. Such things do not exist amongst the ordinary shareholder people who go to make up the 8,000 or more individual shareholders of the investment trust. The poor man is there on a bigger scale than the richer trader, but each one has a small capital. The poor employee is in it too. He has put his savings out of life into myself when the investment trust scheme was started. I thank him, and today I'm glad to say that he will have an occasion to profit from his spirit of self-sacrifice in that time. As building societies will be one of our most important activities in the future, may I now appeal to the government and through their excellencies here, to the present, your present, and to the governor's conference and the colonial office. There is a very general apprehension, not at all misplaced, that I myself share, that should the Ismaili, by the help of the investment trust and exceptional cooperation among themselves, build better and newer houses all over these territories, the only result will be, sooner or later, that further taxation for them, and that a little later, when the government is compelled to come to deal with those communities that are not prepared to help themselves, then these backward sections of society will be getting government grants for better housing, while our societies will be getting higher taxes. Unfortunately, that is the way that very often all governments throughout the world act. I appeal therefore to the colonial office and to the government that carry out policies that a certain number of years guarantee of no increase of taxation for better houses should be given to new building societies. I've carefully gone into the matter myself during the last few years, and in my opinion, there is no reason why Ismailis should not be given a fair chance by a sure estate and ordinances that will make it possible for them to carry out the fundamental changes in their living conditions through better housing, which will influence all their existence. Another need is the improvement of the health of the community. For this also, the Diamond Jubilee has given me an opportunity to carry out certain important schemes, but here too we need government help. One such scheme is the combined maternity room, dispensary, and nursing homes on a proper and salubrious site should be established in Dar es Salaam and Mombasa to begin with, and later in all other centers of Ismaili activity. The second seamless second buffer areas such as the Lake District, the southern islands of Tanganyika, and along the Tanganyika Railway, and possibly between Mombasa and Nairobi, traveling doctors should go about with mobile pharmacies to help those who live either in small townships or in shambas and in villages. This was the health resolution of the Economic Conference. But perhaps the greatest need of the Ismaili from the point of view of health is to have a reasonable proportion of dentists. At present, the situation is such as to break one's heart. Practically not one in the 1,000 people you see here, not one of the 1,000 Ismailis that are assembled in this, on this occasion, not one in 1,000 has practically ever had any attention paid to his teeth at any period of his life. This is no exaggeration. Probably it is an understatement. We have only one Ismaili dentist in Nairobi, and obviously he cannot give up his whole life to charitable work, but must look after the ordinary interests of his profession, so a great deal of his time is taken up by the well-to-do citizens of Nairobi. There are hardly any European dentists, and their fees are far above the possibility of 99 or even 999% of my people. One of our UN Jubilee schemes prepared last year in Nairobi was to have a reasonable proportion of dentists, say one to each 3,000 or 4,000, that's already a very, very small ambition of the population, which is very poor in fact in comparison with European and American standards. Yet the doors of all mental hospitals in Britain are closed to us. I've tried myself to get the boy in children, and not one has ever succeeded. At present, always the same reply, we are full up, we are full up, we are full up. We cannot get the boy into this. I've tried to send scholars of my own, on my own behalf, for this particular work, and yet every dental surgery tells you that the first chance must be given for the men who come out of the army. Indian diplomats are alas not accepted, and Indian dentists are forbidden to practice. The Indian doctors have a free run of all hospitals here. The only country left with the possibility is Ireland, but there is a stiff Latin preliminary examination which puts an end to any hopes there. I cannot think of any greater service to humanity when you remember the horrors caused by dental decay in early life and its disastrous consequences for the thousands of individuals, in fact for the majority of those who found here this afternoon. And I appeal for the influence of the Colonial Office so that I may have the opportunity of sending some half a dozen young men at least to Great Britain in dental colleges. I hope and believe that the various governments will also help us when we start the foundation of charitable institutions such as the combined dispensary, nursing home, maternity, of which I've spoken in the principal centers of the Ismaili population. All these institutions will be salubrious sites. It is no use putting them in the midst either of places which belong to schemes for the future or to the present overcrowded centers in town. I thank sincerely my Muslim brethren of the Islamic Welfare Association of East Africa for their most generous address to me and their appreciation of the little I've been able to do towards their education and general improvement. This work is in its infancy at present, but I appeal to all Muslims to go forward along the line laid down by the Muslim Conference of last year and this year, and for the necessary improvement for amongst the African Muslim population, whether Swahili, Somali, or Baganda, in education and general health and welfare. There is little time to lose. The night is ever approaching, and I beg all Muslims here to assemble, whatever their race or origin, as well as those who will hear my speech in other parts, not to fritter away their very limited strength, their very poor strength, their small experience in forming different societies, but to concentrate and work all unitedly within the Muslim Welfare Association, which I hope and believe, under the leadership of some of our best and most enthusiastic Islamic workers, such as Bajaba, Abdullah Karimji, the Liwali of Mombasa, the Liwali and here, and some other leaders, can bring about great changes in the education, health, and social welfare, and moral and religious uplift of Arab and African Muslims. Now, ladies and gentlemen, one word, if I may be allowed to say, of general advice, or rather of my impression to inhabitants here, whatever their race, color, and creed. I've had some experience of the causes of strife, and I was a very active member of the League of Nations, and of the Disarmament Conference, and of the various other conferences attached to the League for some 7 years. For some 7 years, Geneva was my not only more or less spiritual but physical home. Why did it fail? Ultimately because of hate. And yet why did people hate each other? Not for amusement, no. Because of fear. Where there is fear, there is no love, but hate easily enters through the window of fear, even if the door is shut. I appeal to all of you Africans, Europeans and Indians, do not fear each other. Work together. This happening, East Africa at least is big enough. There is still virgin soil which has hardly been scratched in every sense of the word, not only soil as earth, but soil as activity. Unlike China, India and Europe, and Western Europe at least, the population is still very small. We have no need to struggle for existence here for a century at least. And so why foresee trouble for your great-grandchildren? They are making none. Thanks to improvement, and if things take a turn for good instead of evil, then the new forces of nature, we are certain, will make human relations easier and give each and all security, comfort, and a better time. Today's strife here on racial lines is imaginary fear. The onlooker sees most of the day, and I've been here an onlooker for nearly two years. There is no getting away from it. If you will throw fear out of your mind, you will soon realize that white, black, and brown are complementary. Should suspicion and fear still continue, surely there is one way of meeting it and turning it around to cooperation and peace. One way that sometimes fails, but also sometimes succeeds, round table conferences. Round table conferences, if restored to early at the first time, persistent suspicion will go a long way to remove fear. I have in mind good many cases. I will only refer to one. Some 20 years ago, there was a round table conference between General Herzog and Dr. Muller, then governing South Africa, and the Indian government, as well as representatives of the Indian population of South Africa. That conference brought a peace and a workable settlement for a couple of decades in a difficult situation, and for nearly a generation, there is little cause for active friction between the European and inhabitants of the south of this continent. What a pity that excellent precedent has not been more generally followed throughout the world. Ladies and gentlemen, I've only elaborated on the work before the Ismaili community. If my ideas are to be carried out by the various councils, institutions, and so forth, and established here, and more important than all such councils, by the investment trust itself, which is today enriched by between 1/4 and 1/3 of its present capital, then speeches alone will not carry these dreams into the world of reality. On my part, there have been reminders, symbols, letters, personal and individual remonstrance, encouragement, advice, and both happy results and disappointment. Part of those who represent me here, it must be the main purpose of life and ambition to profit now that it is at last possible to profit by this beginning of constructive capital socialism.